Okay, I'm here in the lovely surroundings of the House of St Barnabas in London, having lunch with Brendan O'Keefe, who's the chief, the managing director of Epic CIC. They're a public service mutual, and Brendan's also a member of Social Club. So, Brendan, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. Brendan, just very quickly, for those that haven't sort of heard of you or heard of Epic, just tell me a little bit about yourself and Epic in a really quick summary kind of way.
Sure, yeah. We're a youth support services social enterprise based in West London, predominantly Kensington and Chelsea. We were part of Kensington and Chelsea Council until the 1st of January 2014.
Yeah.
We decided to think about a different model for delivering youth support services because of all of the cuts we were experiencing, but we were challenged by the council to come up with a different model, and the public service mutual model was the one that really stood out for us as the one we wanted to pursue.
Okay, so you were in the council, you thought you could make a better job of it outside the council.
Yeah.
Has it worked?
Mostly. I mean, some things have worked really well and some things, we're experimenting. I mean, that is one of the great things about being in an independent environment. You can try new things, some of which work brilliantly and some of which are duds. And you have to accept that if you're going to be innovative, there will be things that don't quite work so well. But I think probably one of the primary motivators for doing the spin-out thing was so that we'd be in a place where we could bring in funding from other sources that would not be eligible for a local authority service. And in the past 4 years, we've raised and generated an additional 4.2 million of additional funding that has been spent on young people in West London that we would not have been able to recruit as a local authority service.
Okay, so that sounds good. Just on a very personal level, you know, you were presumably a well-paid middle to senior manager in the council with a pension and a comfortable life that goes with that. Why the hell go through all the pain and trauma of setting up a business that presumably you've got to put a load of time and effort into and then subsequently lead that is no longer part of the council? What's motivating this move for you?
Primarily because of the service we offer and the young people we want to work with, and the times we were in or are in, dismantling a service with cut after cut after cut did not feel professionally appealing to me, and I wanted to do something differently. For me, I was a senior manager in the local authority, but I kind of plateaued and every day felt pretty much the same. Since I started in mutual, my learning curve has gone absolutely vertical. It continues to be so.
So this is a new you,
It is, and I don't regret it for one moment. I sometimes jokingly say that had I stayed in the council and clung on for my pension, I would be looking back on life and telling the grandchildren I was an okay civil servant. Well, that doesn't sound very attractive side story.
Yes, you're rocking them on your knee and thinking, well, what's the, how am I going to inspire them?
And it's about really wanting to try and to do something different. I think the difficulty for us that nobody else had done it in the youth sector.
No, you were a leader in this.
And we took a lot of iteration from what was going on in the NHS, and NHS colleagues were great in helping us and advising us. But we didn't have an exemplar that we could say, hey, look at them.
You're trailblazing. So today, you know, they're hoping loads more people do this.
Yeah.
Being really sort of honest about it, what's been the hardest thing in making this new thing work?
It won't be a great surprise to hear it's shifting the staff culture away from a local authority, somewhat command control culture that is very reactive rather than proactive. Not necessarily a bad thing when you're in a local authority, but it's not a good thing for a social enterprise because that doesn't work. And so shifting the staff culture to a more entrepreneurial, innovative, people-taking responsibility culture has been difficult.
From what we know about culture, it takes years to change a culture. Yeah. So how can you make meaningful culture change in a short time, do you think? Can you do that? Have you done that?
I think you can. We did a lot of research, and I mean, I've been very interested in the ideas that are around from Dan Pink and Henry Stewart, who talk about giving staff autonomy and freedom within parameters. And
yeah.
Getting them to do the job you hired them to do, being forgiving of mistakes, and just engendering an atmosphere and a culture of innovation. And we've ploughed that through the organisation. I would say that some people got it on day one and loved it.
Mm.
Some people needed a lot more persuading and are on a journey. And then a small minority just never will get it. And for some of those, we've had to part company.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to move people on. And obviously, my observation of all businesses is that, you know, however good the founder, without a fantastic team around him or her, it's not going to work. Have you managed to develop a team that has been strong enough to take you where you thought you wanted to go?
I guess that's one of the biggest challenges, and one of the difficulties, or the difficult decisions I had to make fairly early on, that was the senior management team that helped us to spin out wasn't necessarily the right one to run it as a social enterprise with all the different and competing pressures. So we've had to make changes. We have a good and strong team. But what we're much more open to is external influence and input.
Yeah, so bringing different DNA into the organisation.
Exactly, and people for whom we would not have even looked at as a local authority service, but people who were right for us. People such as yourself, Craig, and things like Social Club, where you get together with other MD CEOs, and not only is it support, it's also help with it. There's no problem that somebody else hasn't encountered and can give you advice on, which is a great thing.
I would of course agree with that.
But it's true, you're hearing it from a paying customer.
That's fantastic. So in terms of, you know, you're one of a group of organisations that spun out 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
You've been through a consolidation. You've experienced a bit of growth. What next for these businesses? You know, what's the logical next step for a spin out that's kind of, you know, not in its early stage, but is moving into its next more mature stage?
Yeah, I think, well, what we've been extremely good at is diversifying our funding streams, and just constantly being aware of what the market will pay for, redesigning all of the time. We're going through a major redesign of our services, because what we span out with 4.5+ years ago, it's starting to look a little bit jaded, and I can't expect the commissioners to say, hey, that stuff you bought 4.5-5 years ago, we're offering more of it. You know, we want to constantly reinvent ourselves, focus on what our young people are saying that they want, which is different from what it was from 4 or 5 years ago. Very much a lot more around mental health, access to well-being programs, which were not featuring so much a few years ago. We've got to move as where young people are, which is our business, but also what commissioners will pay for. You know, what are they seeing as their priorities, and what will they pay for to deliver? But I also think that mutuals and other similar organisations have a great opportunity to influence and persuade the whole public sector commissioning environment that the rather rigid marketisation of the children's sector, which is our sector, isn't one that's reduced the value for money, top-notch services that I think people anticipated that it would. And there are many other ways, through joint ventures and partnerships with public bodies, that will produce better results that don't require providers to compete for ever-decreasing and vanishing sums of money.
Yes. So, because obviously procurement of these services, you're in a marketplace. Those marketplaces don't always work very well, and they don't always deliver the best organisations with the best offers necessarily. Thinking about yourself as an individual, because I think some of the people listening to this will be either thinking about doing this, or they're earlier in the journey. There's I think what I observe when I look at this sector is that there are a bunch of people who've done it, who've got the T-shirt, who are probably sometimes ready to move on, do other things. And I worry a bit about that because I see a sector that's whose leadership is incredible. Yeah. who are going to move forward. What are you doing in your own organisation to try and make sure that your shoes are filled, or do you think they might be filled probably by somebody coming in from outside?
Potentially somebody from outside, but there are also people within the organisation who have that potential, and we would like to grow that. Succession planning is not a strength of the sector, we have to be honest about that, and that's something that we really do need to attend to. But there are many, many inspiring figures in this sector. I've been inspired enormously by several people, and sometimes that can be daunting because you think, I could never do what they do, but actually we're not so terribly special, and it's about determination and commitment and a willingness to be open to new ideas and learning from others. I think that's what has helped me enormously.
Yes, there's been a lot of good peer support, I think, in this, and yes, I'd almost like to see kind of like some of these the longer standing leaders kind of almost put on a bit of a pedestal and used more systematically
very
as mentors and coaches by government, you know, and by others.
That'd be good. I think what unites us all is this certainty that we have that there's a better way of delivering public services, better services to the public, but also better value for money. And what could be argued about in that?
Yeah, and you know, because I suppose the ultimate point of this is that, you know, we can do better for less. That's what it's all about. And just one final question, you know, the term mutualisation is bandied around and employee ownership and all of that. What does that actually mean in a day-to-day context?
Using our own example, for us, it means staff and governance. So we have five staff who are elected by their peers to be on the board of directors. In fact, I'm fresh out of a board meeting yesterday evening when they quite appropriately and with great skill gave me a grilling, which is their job. It requires a different style of leadership to run an organisation that's employee-led. It requires you to be much more open, much more transparent, and to think much more carefully about how you translate your business concepts in a way that staff will appreciate and support and help to enable. I think it's also about a culture that welcomes firm, strong debate and that the MD hasn't got too much of an ego and is open to listening. But ultimately, they know you're in charge and you have to be.
You have to make the decision. It's not as though you're some sort of, you know, democratic council thing. It's you know, you're if you need to make the call, you make the call.
Yeah. I mean, I've always said to staff, look, obviously we want to be much more consultative and much more open than we were as a local authority service, but it's not a workers' co-op. It can't work like that.
Definitely not. Those kind of organisations, I think, often I think struggle to evolve and develop and make tough decisions, because I think there are often some very tough decisions to be made in all businesses and these ones included. Just in terms of final question and a parting shot, what's your sort of, you know, if you can kind of grab people by the lapels who are, you know, 5 years behind the track on you on this, what's the one thing you'd really want to drill into somebody, you know, who's maybe either just about to do this or has just done it, about what the next few years is going to hold and what they need to do? You know, if you've got 10 seconds with somebody, what do you want to really push at them hard as advice?
As advice, I'd say you've got to really want to do it.
Yeah.
You can have your moments of self-doubt and reflection and those sleepless nights sometimes, but you've really got to want to do it. For me, I went through those sleepless nights, but I was determined because I just felt there's a better way of delivering public services, and I really want to be showing how that can be done. So really wanting to do it, but also making sure you've got the support around you of others who will help you in those difficult times.
Yes, within and beyond the organisation.
Absolutely, and through networks and plug again, social club has been one.
My observation of you, Brendan, is that you've always been pretty good at finding the support you need and looking for it. And if you can't see it, going getting it.
Indeed, and one of the great strengths and joys of the sector is people are so willing to give their time. I found that right from the start, and now I'm hoping I'm able to give others my time because I feel that there's that I've had the investment that I need to put back in, and I think that's only fair.
Fantastic. Brendan O'Keefe of Epic, thank you very, very much indeed for this today. It's been brilliant.
Pleasure.
Yeah, let's have our lunch.
Yeah, okay.